If you're anything like us, you love expressing your inner witch with the clothes you wear and supporting queer-owned businesses while you're at it. And we've divined exactly the magical shop for that.
Cunning Owl Creations is an online occult apparel and merchandise shop run by Nathan Keechel, who you may know as Blue Knight on YouTube. Nathan and I connected on Instagram, but I was a YouTube subscriber for quite some time before we started this show. And their shop is expanding soon, so now is the perfect time to check them out.
Cunning Owl's wearables come in a variety of fits and styles for every aesthetic. They have hats, hoodies, t-shirts, and tank tops, all with a variety of witchy graphics, quotes, and designs. My personal favorite is the Gay Witch Bitch graphic tank, because that is just, like, really on brand for us.
In addition to a ton of cute clothes, Cunning Owl Creations also creates custom, handmade, leather-covered, post-bound, Book of Shadows-style journals in a variety of colors and page styles. The books come in 9x12 or 11x14 sizes. And the cool thing about a post-bound book is that it provides you the ease of being able to rearrange or remove pages from your book. These books aren't only practical, but they're really beautiful. Nathan puts a lot of effort and care into each one, and I could not be more excited for you all to see them. I've used the three-ring binder method for years for my Book of Shadows because I could never afford a handmade, high-quality book, and I was never crafty enough to make one.
And that's where we have some good news for you all. Whether you're searching for phone cases, candles, threads, or a big, thick Book of Shadows of your very own, Nathan and his team at Cunning Owl is offering all of our Witch Bitches 10% off your purchase. Just enter the code THEWITCHBITCHESREVIEW at checkout.
That's the Witch Bitches Review, all lowercase, all one word, for 10% off. We are really excited to share this offer with you guys as a way to give back for supporting us and our show. And a huge thank you to Nathan at Cunning Owl Creations for helping us do that.
We are, like, so jazzed to have the opportunity to promote and support other LGBTQ+ artists and businesses in our space, and hope to continue doing so with our work here. Be sure to check out the shop and Blue Knight with two T's on YouTube, and tell them your favorite witch bitches, Siren and Phoenix, at WBR Podcast sent you.
Let's get into the episode.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Hello and welcome to Witch Bitches Review. I am your bumbling British buffoon of a warlock boss attempting to frame you for grand larceny and murder, Phoenix Arcana Lightwood.
And I'm your petty bitch coworker who's banging the boss and stealing your sandwiches, who's also an incompetent power-stealing warlock, who's also a big fucking cat, Siren Rex Fry. This is the podcast where two actual witches analyze and review representations of witchcraft in media and pop culture.
Today we're talking about Charmed Season 1, Episode 10, Wicca Envy.
The title Wicca Envy is a reference to Sigmund Freud's outlandish and misogynistic theory of penis envy, where he basically thought that a key element of female development was a stage where girls freak out because they, quote-unquote, just realized they don't have a schlong. I'm not gonna go super into this because it's all bullshit and stems from Freud's belief that anyone without a penis was inherently inferior and all women wish they were men. In general, all of Freud's theories about women are based on what he thought of women and not what women think about themselves. This is a weird title that actually requires a little bit of gender analysis. It's just a title, right? But it's also pretty loaded. Comparing Wicca to penis envy in a gender reversal implies that Wicca, which I'll remind you, the charmed ones do not practice, is a female-only thing that men wish they could have. Now, they're really just referencing the fact that Rex is trying to steal their powers because he's all sad that he has a dick but no witchcraft. But we're left with the same tired assumption that only women can be witches and a tacit endorsement of the gender binary, which I've said before and I'll say again, is really annoying on a show about witchcraft.
According to IMDb, this episode ranked 8.2 out of 10, and is the one where Prue is arrested for stealing a priceless tiara. It is revealed that her boss, Rex, is a warlock. The sisters must prove Prue's innocence and vanquish Rex before it's too late. The episode was directed by Mel Damsky and written by like 500 million thousand people.
That's not an exaggeration. Not at all.
I really like this episode. Again, I think that this episode, in conjunction with the last one, are very like quintessential Charmed. They have the vibe of the show that we know and love, and it kind of feels a little bit like what we get to see later.
Yeah, I really like this one too, even though I just like read the title for film. But at the same time, it has, okay, so like overall, it just has like a really great, like you said, quintessential Charmed feeling. But at the same time, like there's just so many elements of it that are so like contrived and like what the hell and just sort of disjointed. And somehow it all comes together and works in the end. But if you look too closely, it's kind of like a Monet, you know? You know?
No, I don't understand the painting reference, but...
Oh, my God. Well, that's because you have literally no culture and never watched Clueless. Okay. A Monet is a reference from the 90s. A Monet means it looks okay from far away, but up close, it's a big old mess.
Got it. Oh, wow. I can tell that we've been out of the game for a while, because I am, like, not in the flow.
Been off for a while, but the point is that it's because my life is a hot damn mess, but, like, we're trying to work around that. Phoenix has been really great, and I've been really terrible, but, you know, we'll get through it.
Well, I'm happy to be back. I'm happy to be back in this space, but if this episode is a little bumpy, please forgive us. It is the first time we've recorded in a while. Also, if my track sounds like garbage, it's because it's 90 degrees in Chicago today and I don't feel like turning my air conditioner off and melting.
Because Phoenix can't be bothered to shut down his modern conveniences for the sake of our art, but whatever, it's fine.
That is absolutely fucking right. Let's get into the scene by scene. Are we ready to get into it?
You betcha. So this episode opens with Prue and Phoebe coming home from a like hot witch bitch shopping trip with a million bags. And Piper is slutting it up, they find, when they get home. Okay, she's like carousing with Leo. It's very weird. I don't get straight people, but like they're like making out downstairs and then they're like, let's like, I don't know, like link elbows and like jog upstairs half undressed to go have sex. I don't get it, but you know, it was the 90s.
Maybe they're like playing a rodeo game and Piper's like a little piggy and he has to chase her down and tie her up.
Yeah, no, that sounds more like some kind of shit you'd be involved in. Yeah, but so Piper freaks out when she sees her sisters, so she freezes Leo, and then there's this absolutely ridiculous scene, like outrageous right off the bat, where she slides across the wooden floor like, bitch, you were gonna get a splinter, your shirt is open. Whatever. And to mask for the fact that she just made an absolute fool out of herself, Piper's like, are you depression buying? And then Prue and Phoebe are like, no, this isn't depression. This is just us flaunting our capitalistic wealth.
You know, Prue deserves some new clothes. She's been through it.
Oh, she's been through a lot.
She's fresh off a breakup. I feel like it was a good idea for her to maybe get some retail therapy in there. We transition into the next scene where Rex is being an astral creep and like peeping in on Prue as she's getting undressed. I try to distract myself from the uncomfortable vibes of this scene by watching Kit play in the shopping bags because I think it's the cutest thing ever.
Yeah, the cat's awesome.
The cat is great. Rex is awful.
Icky.
But he is using this new power that he has to like suggest to Prue that this stolen tiara is her date book. And then he like tries to look down her shirt like a creep. But Kit is like, stop perving on my mom. And Rex is like, oh fuck, this cat can see me. He goes back into his body, which is like a really trippy effect. Like, I was just watching this right before we started. And when Rex like goes in back into his body and it's like kaleidoscopy almost, the way that like we zoom in on his eyes or whatever, it made me a little nauseous to watch, to be honest. But Hannah is like a total idiot about how this power works. Like, it's magic.
Yeah, I'm like a warlock and I really want their powers, but like, what is astral projection? I mean, any basic witch who's read one Silver Ravenwolf book knows, but I don't get it, Rex. Help me.
So Rex, in turn, has to just, like, exposition astral projection to Hannah. And to, you know, show her how it works, he assaults her, essentially.
Basically, he like psychically roofies her and tells her to like take her clothes off, and she just looks like there's a happy zombie while she does it. It's really messed up.
Uncomfy. The opening part of this, I mean, Rex's behavior in general is very predatory and uncomfortable throughout the entirety of the episode.
He's very like sexual predator in this episode, which he wasn't really before. Like, it was not happening until this episode.
Yeah, it just seems a little off base and like unnecessary to the story for there to be these little like sexual motivations. It's uncomfortable.
It's pretty gross, and it's not really in the same way as it was in The Dream Sorcerer, because in that episode they were clearly making a statement about like men and sexual harassment. But in this episode it's more like, oh, let's make him a sexual predator to reinforce the fact that he's evil because we're too lazy to give him any other evil qualities. Like, it was very that.
Yeah, no, exactly. It was, I don't want to say it was lazy on the part of the writers, because apparently there were like 1,000 of them working on this, but like, I feel like it was unnecessary. I don't think it needed to be in the story. I feel like this was just as sinister without it.
Well, it was either lazy or like some guy writer's power fantasy, which, let's be real, like, any straight guy who can astral project is going to use it to creep on women, because they do that without powers. So, yeah.
After we get that really uncomfortable moment, we have the opening credits.
And the song that plays after the opening credits and the whole scene is, like, one of her favorite things. And Phoenix, like, won't fucking stop singing it at me.
It's so good.
It is.
She's so high.
Cause she's so high. High above me.
It's so fun. It's so fun and campy and just like, it's great. It's a great song to have in an opening.
It really is a great song. It's called She's So High by Tal Bachman. And I think it was a one hit wonder, but it was like super popular in the 90s for a while. And it's playing while True is like using telekinesis to like pick out an outfit from all her new clothes. So I don't know. It has this vibe of like, it just makes Prue like seem like super powerful, and like she's using like fashion to be powerful. And that may be a little sexist to some people, but I like it on her.
I definitely think it's a great look. This scene reminds me of like the opening sequence of Sabrina the Teenage Witch in the first couple of seasons, where she's like using her powers to change her clothes and it's like fun and dancey. I really like, I lived for that in this one.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. So then there's like some light banter about Phoebe stealing Prue's clothes because Phoebe's a screw up, Phoebe's a thief, blah blah blah. You know, then it's revealed that Piper was just banging Leo like all night, and they get like all like funny with Piper saying that she got nervous and froze him during sex, and then she started doing it on purpose, like freezing him during sex. And I don't have a vagina, and I'm just like, how does freezing improve the sex? I don't get it.
I kind of understand the thought process behind it. So you are surprisingly not a bottom. So I am going to
surprisingly go fuck yourself.
I'm going to try to explain this from like a verse point of view. I feel like, so she's freezing him because he's, like, hitting the right spots. Or maybe she's freezing him so that he doesn't come and it can last longer.
Okay. Okay.
I do have a question. Does Leo's penis freeze because it's in a different room than Piper is in? Does Piper's vagina count as a room?
Okay. I don't know. I mean, it counts as a crab, so I guess it can count as a room.
Okay, so we are making the determination that Piper's vagina is both a crab and a spare bedroom.
Piper's vagina is many, many things. She is a witch, goddammit. She will not be contained.
That is a multifaceted crustacean.
Yeah. So vaginal confusion aside, Prue goes to work and she like brings Phoebe with her for some reason. It's really unclear.
It's because Phoebe's borrowing the car. Phoebe's gonna borrow her car. Prue had to go to work.
So if you're gonna borrow someone's car after you drop them off at work, do you like go inside with them? It's not like it's the gas station and she needed a pack of cigarettes. It's an auction house. She doesn't have a job. What can she afford there? But anyway, all right, so the fuzz is all over the place. Jaime, the Latino janitor, tells Prue about the stolen tiara, like she didn't fucking know already, you know, because she stole it. Okay. Because in addition to being a murderer, she's also like a fucking museum art thief. Yeah.
She was being mind controlled. She was being mind controlled.
Yeah, okay. There's always an excuse, you know? So, just on the spot, Rex asks Phoebe out so they can, like, go see The Verve, which, again, like, so 90s. And, it is aka awkward.
So, The Verve is a real band?
Yeah. Do you not? No. Okay. That song that they talk about, Bittersweet Symphony, was popularized in the movie Cruel Intentions. It's the ending song. And it is a really good song.
I looked that up before we started. And I knew that the answer was yes, but that just, it feels false. It feels like it's not a real band.
Well, I mean, Charmed, like, used, like, a lot of real 90s music a lot, so. Yeah, so anyway, so Hannah's basically kind of like, hey, Andy, why don't you investigate Prue because she's a murderer and a thief?
Hannah is, like, real pissed that Rex is cheating on her with screw-up Phoebe. And Rex is like, I miraculously know that there is a spell in the Book of Shadows for them to give up their powers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got all the information, but doesn't know what to do with it.
How does he know? How is he aware of the spell that's in the book? It's never explained.
No.
Like,
not at all.
Did he check out a copy in the Warlock Library? Like, I don't understand.
Well, I mean, so at this point, you know, we haven't established that evil can't touch the book yet, but still, like, there's really no way for him to know unless he, like, broke into their house and just, like, thumbed through it for a little bit. You know, don't look at it too hard. It's a total Monet. So, Prue goes to the cop shop to answer Andy's dumbass questions. And Daryl is like, brother, this bitch is shady as hell. And Prue didn't bring over the right security tapes, which makes her look, like, real suspicious.
Yeah, it's everything that happens with Prue and this frame job is, like, too obvious. Rex and Hannah are just incompetent.
Oh, I don't know. I think their plan is pretty good. It's just the problem is that, of course, Andy is involved because this is a grand larceny and not a murder, but that's why a homicide detective is lead on the case because it's Prue's boyfriend. And also, that would never fucking happen, by the way. That would never happen in real life where a case where Prue could be the suspect, her ex-boyfriend would be assigned to it officially by the police department. That would never happen. That's a legal nightmare. It would never happen, but whatever.
So grand larceny aside, Prue goes to Quake to talk about Piper's sex life, and all Piper wants to talk about is stolen jewelry. But Phoebe shows up with Rex and brags about seeing this apparently real band. And Prue is like, fuck you both. I don't want to have dinner with you. I'm going home and going to bed.
Can we talk about how Prue looks at Piper and says, you're glowing, which is something that people often say to pregnant women and not exactly what a single girl wants to hear after a one-night stand?
See, we just have, like, the best birth control, so, like, I didn't even think about that. But the next morning, Phoebe has roses from Rex, which is uncomfortable, and Piper's on the phone with Leo. Leo has a phone?
Why does Leo have a phone? That's
Leo got a phone to talk to Piper.
It's nonsense.
And he's not supposed to be seeing her. Leo's, like, whole thing doesn't make sense.
Not right? At like, all.
He has a truck. He apparently has a place to live. Like, he doesn't just, like, orb away to, like, back up there when he's not at their house fixing their plumbing. Like,
yeah, because as they establish White Lighters later, there's no way that he's got a phone. There's no way that he's, like, hanging out in an apartment. There's no way that he has a truck. Like, it's, no, stop it. And there's no way that he tucks in his fucking shirt like that. I just, what?
I mean, I don't know about that one, but maybe.
Yeah, okay, but so later, again, like, it's a problem that he's a white lighter and he's, like, dating Piper, but because he's a white lighter, he got a phone to talk to her on, even though he's not allowed to date her, but he got a phone. And how the fuck did he get a phone? Because white lighters don't have money. Just what even ever, Leo, just tuck in your shirt like that and own a phone. I don't even care, just whatever.
So Rex is helping Phoebe get a job now, which is weird, and Prue again is like, fuck you both. Andy and Daryl show up with a warrant to search Prue's house, They work in Homicide. These two are like the all-purpose cleaners of the SFPD. I don't understand what their job is. They do everything. They investigate murdered people. They investigate broken windows. They investigate stolen feathers, stolen jewelry. Are they the only two cops on the police force?
That is what it is like. Oh my God, it's exactly like that. And you know, that is like kind of a lazy writing thing too. Have you ever watched Teen Wolf?
No, I have not.
I find that really hard to believe because it's homoerotic as fuck. But anyway, okay, so the mom on Teen Wolf is like a nurse, but I swear to God, depending on what episode you're in, she runs that whole goddamn hospital. It's like the same thing. It's the same thing.
They're raiding Prue's room, and Piper keeps freezing the room before Andy finds the tiara because the tiara is in the house. Rex shows up in his astral form while the sisters are bickering with one another. Piper hides the tiara in the dresser. And the room unfreezes, and Rex is like, it's in the fucking dresser. And so the cops go look in the dresser, and this continues with the freezing the room, and the moving the tiara, and the freezing the room. Rex is like, you're a miserable little witch. And Piper's like, I need to go to therapy.
It's like a whole big kerfuffle.
It's a whole big thing. This scene is really fun, though. Like, it's super camp. And again, this is one of the scenes that feels like the... That feels like Charmed to me. Like, yeah. This is one of the scenes that I think of.
This scene is really good because it's got, like, all the powers, like, happening, and it's really ridiculous. But also just, like, the physical comedy that the sisters do in it is so hilarious. Like, I think, like, Phoebe's facial expressions and the way that Piper, like, panics with her body every time they're about to find the tiara are just really funny and so on brand and so, like, what makes the show great.
Yeah, it's really, really, really good. Phoebe moves the tiara up to the attic and Rex gives up. The cat scared him off again, I guess.
And then Andy is like, well, the tiara is not in your bedroom and there's nowhere else you could hide it in your fucking family mansion. So I guess we'll just go.
They just fucking leave. They're just like, okay, it wasn't under your pillows. Darn. It wasn't in your dresser. Darn.
Which, again, okay, first of all, there is no way that her ex would be allowed to search her house. There's no fucking way that that would be allowed to happen. That would get thrown out of court so fast, even if he did find the tiara. Like, I mean, a freaking public defender could have that search warrant thrown out. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. Absolutely not.
But also, they didn't even, like, shred her pillows or her mattress. Like, when they search your house, they will fuck your shit up.
I mean, it's probably because it was her boyfriend.
And probably because he's supposed to be a homicide detective and has no fucking clue what he's doing.
Rex projects back into his body, returns to his body, back to Hannah, and is all pissy and decides that they need to up the stakes and kill someone.
So before we go any further here, I know we're not really doing a segment on this, but can we talk about the astral projection in this episode for a second?
Yeah, absolutely. I have thoughts about it.
Yeah,
for sure.
So the way that Rex astral projects is not like super far off from the actual practice, which is just basically about your spirit or consciousness or however you want to describe it, leaving your body to go exploring, but still being connected to your body. Like, you're not dead. You just kind of sent your presence out there invisibly to, like, you know, look at shit. It's way more accurate than when Prue starts astral projecting next season, for sure. But I've never really read anything about how astral projection suddenly, like, gives you the ability to control people's minds, like Rex has in this episode. Like, that feels like two completely different powers, but he acts like they're one and the same. Like, if you're in astral form, you can just tell people what to think, and then they just do it. It's fine. No will save, whatever.
You know, I have heard of planting thought forms on people and things of that nature in some of the stuff that I've read, but I've never seen it in conjunction with astral projection either. I understand why they're written in the same vein, kind of, here. Because Rex is, like, there, but he's just there on a different plane. I assume it's kind of like he's a ghost, but not dead, so he can, like, interact with them subconsciously. But yeah, it's very strange. It's a very strange power, but it is a lot more accurate than Prue's multiplication power that she gets later.
Yeah. So, I mean, so when Rex explains it to Hannah, when she's being all, like, dumb about it, like, he says that he can implant thoughts in people because he's in astral form. He says the two are related. So, I mean, I could get it if he had, like, both powers and was using them in conjunction. But the whole them being related thing, that's a little off the mark. But can we also talk about how, once again, being able to do these two things at once, spying on people and controlling their minds invisibly, is a godlike power, and he totally fucks it up. Like,
yeah,
totally fucks it up, because he could just astral project over there when they're all in the same room and be like, hey, you guys want to cast this spell and then deliver your powers to me. And then they would do it. But instead he's like, what if I came up with an overly complicated scheme and involved your ex-boyfriend?
It's a really good point. I mean, I feel like these are first season villains with first season ideas and first season problems.
Definitely first season ideas, for sure.
So, you know, the thoughts aren't fully fleshed out yet. The plans aren't all there. They needed just a little bit more time. Unfortunately, they don't get it. But, well, not unfortunately, because the Charmed Ones are the heroes of the show. I shouldn't root for the villains, but...
Well, all I'm saying is that if I could invisibly astral project and control people's minds, I could totally fucking take down the Charmed Ones. Like, no problem. Like, bam, 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 you bitches are done.
Honestly, I don't know how they make it 8 years, because they are not well-practiced witches.
Well, you know, Phoenix, not all of them do.
You're right. Good point. That's a good point. Not a great plan on Rex's part. There were easier ways to do it, for sure. He just chose not to do it. Honestly, everything that I do is super convoluted and roundabout, so I probably would have done it the same way and gotten killed too, so I'm not one to judge.
So I guess what you're saying is Rex's, like, misogyny that's expressed through sexually harassing women is really because he's just a big old gay bottom whore like you.
Yep.
Well, case closed, everybody.
Didn't we say in a previous episode that Rex is a bottom?
Or maybe I just want him to be. Anyway.
So Prue is well aware that a warlock is fucking with her. And now she decides to take seriously the thing that Hannah said to her just a couple of episodes ago when she was under a truth spell.
Right.
That it was her mission in life to destroy her. Now is the time that she is like, that was a little sketchy.
Oh, you know, that didn't add up, did it?
Leo's there to fix the plumbing yet again.
The plumbing. The plumbing.
That spare room's in need of some repairs.
He there to fix Piper's plumbing with his tool.
And Phoebe's like, it's gotta be Leo. He's a warlock. And Piper's like, why is it always somebody that I'm dating that's accused of being that? It's happened one time, Piper. One time someone you've dated has been a warlock. Once.
I mean, I guess that leaves an impression. But yeah, like, don't base your whole identity on it, peeps, okay?
The phone rings, and it's Rex, and it's for Phoebe, and it's awkward. Piper is dusting Phoebe
with, like, a feather duster. I think that's actually super cute, because it's, like, one of those, like, super annoying sister things. And I can totally see that shit happening between me and my sister. Absolutely. Like, if she was on the phone trying to hook up with my boss and I was holding a feather duster, that's 100% how that would go down.
I fully understand, like, Prue's reaction to Phoebe dating Rex. Like, that's uncomfortable. Like, and Phoebe is so defensive about it when Prue is like, this makes me uncomfortable. What Phoebe is doing is not chill.
It's not, but it's, like, so on brand for Phoebe, because, again, she's the screw-up, and she has terrible taste in men, which is part of her screw-up persona developed throughout season one.
I'm on Prue's side with this one. Anyway, Prue kind of is fed up, and she's like, my sister's dating my boss, and Hannah's probably trying to kill me, so I'm gonna go to work now.
Yeah, Hannah is a straight-up evil, no-good motherfucking bitch. So after we've established all of that, Leo goes up to the attic and he uses telekinesis to open drawers, which, by the way, first of all, he never has telekinesis after this ever again. And also, lazy as fuck, they're like 3 feet away from you. But yes, I know we discussed last time how if we had telekinesis, we would use it for everything. But honestly, Leo, like, you're just being a show off. Or maybe he's tired because he just walked up 3 flights of stairs. I don't know.
He's tired from all the fucking he's been doing.
Yeah, I mean, he, like, banged Piper, like, several times more than he meant to because he kept getting frozen in the middle of it. And again, he had to walk up 3 flights of stairs. And honestly, if I had just walked up 3 flights of stairs, I would probably be too tired to use telekinesis unless it was somehow going to find me a couch.
Piper comes in and catches him, and he makes up this lame-ass excuse that he was looking for light bulbs.
When really he was looking for that stolen-ass Romanoff tiara.
Is that what he was doing up there?
Yeah, no, he finds it. He finds it right before Piper walks in, and then he telekinetically closes the drawer back up, but because he just went up 3 flights of stairs and he's a little bit out of shape and kind of winded, because, I mean, he doesn't really walk anywhere. He just orbs, you know, because he's fucking lazy. So he doesn't, like, quite get the drawer closed all the way.
He confesses to Piper that he has to go away soon. Has to go back home. I don't know where the fuck he's been in the meantime, because, as we've established, White Lighters don't have any money.
I guess maybe he lives in his truck.
He's like, anyway, thanks for your cash and your crab. I gotta go.
Leo out. Okay, so cut to Phoebe showing up for her dinner party with Rex that he just invited to. She shows up outside of a door, and Rex astral projects outside and tells her that when she walks in, she's going to see a spectacular apartment. So literally, with astral projection and one sentence, he causes her to hallucinate an elaborate scene. Like, that's a little OP for somebody who still fails in the end, but okay, Rex. The hallucination of the spectacular apartment includes an imaginary couch that they both sit on. You know, are they just like doing like squats in the middle of the apartment? Because I feel like your legs would get tired.
Oh my God, could you imagine? What the fuck? Yeah.
No, I can't. I can't imagine because I'm wicked out of shape and I was projecting all of it onto Leo a second ago. Apparently, fun fact, apparently this is the same apartment that Phoebe moves into with Cole in season 4. I read that on the internet and I tried to verify it and I didn't get very far. So I tried to like visually verify it for myself, and I can see how it's possible because like the big window is like the same, but I'm still not 100% sure that that's true, but that's what the internet will tell you. But anyway, so Phoebe's like, am I early because this is a dinner party and no one's fucking here? And Rex is like, ha, it's just us. I sort of tricked you into coming here and being alone with me. And also, I'll totally get you a job if you bang me. JK lol, that's so funny. Ha ha. And Phoebe looks offended. Like, that's not totally something she would do. Like, have sex with a guy to get a job. A guy that she wants to have sex with anyway. And quite frankly, yeah.
I would totally do that. I would totally do that.
I know that you would. I know. I mean, you will have sex with pretty much any guy for literally nothing. So.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm on one right now. Yeah, so then, like, Rex leaves the room, and then he astral projects over to Phoebe, and he tells her that she's having a premonition. So he literally uses his suggestion power to, like, force her to have a false vision with her own power. Like, that's nuts.
I don't even know how that's possible. I had notes about that. I was like, how did that even work?
Yeah, like, again, it seems a little bit OP, you know? I mean, I guess maybe she didn't actually have a premonition. She just thought she was having one, but still. Little OP. So he makes her have a premonition of Prue in danger in Bucklands running from, get this, a big fucking cat. And so Phoebe bails, and she's, like, super awkward about it, and Rex just kind of, you know, stares at her because he wanted her to leave. It's a really elaborate way to get rid of your date, but okay. Get it? Phoebe is kind of annoying. So after Phoebe leaves, you know, he's still in the spectacular apartment that he caused her to hallucinate, but he snaps his fingers to dispel her hallucination, even though she's no longer there, and he should never have been seeing it in the first place.
Yeah, this power is off the chain. This power that he has is off the chain. I do want to, this is backtracking a little bit to their conversation when she's in the apartment. He offers to help get her a job as a fashion editor. She wears her sister's clothes.
No, yeah, you're right.
I don't think Phoebe is the kind of person that should be editing a fashion magazine. She can't even afford to buy her own shit.
Yeah, no, I mean, that would just basically be her same, like, op-ed article every month. Hot fashion tip, quit your job and steal clothes from relatives.
Like, her first editorial, the shoulder pads in my sister's blazers. Like, I can't. Like, honestly, that's the most unbelievable part of this episode for me.
Yeah, she really thought she could do that job. She is gullible as shit. So Prue is at work late, and Jaime, the Latino janitor, who's only in this episode, and you're going to find out why soon, is there late because he's cleaning third shift, although he was also there in the morning before Prue got there. So,
what's
going on there? Yeah.
They are exploiting this man.
Apparently he probably like sleeps in a crate in the warehouse and cleans the rest of the time. Whatever. It's fine. Need to check your fucking labor laws, Bucklands.
Well, stop it. I feel like there's a really common theme in a lot of shows where characters that are portrayed by people of color are portrayed in like really shitty jobs. We talked about it a little bit in The Wedding from Hell.
The seamstress, yeah.
The seamstress, who was literally, like, the blocking put her beneath a white person.
And I'm absolutely not trying to demean, like, people who do essential jobs, like sanitization, for right. example. I'm just saying that we have this high-class art-dealing business that's run entirely by white people, and the only person of color other than Daryl in the episode is a Latino third shift janitor who is about to die.
Yeah. No, exactly.
So I would call that outwardly racist. Yes, I would.
Thank you for more eloquently putting into words what I was trying to say, because I couldn't find the right language for myself. The only other person of color in this episode is portrayed in a sanitization job and then gets killed. And it's just... I'm tired of that.
Well, and it's very, there's just this very clear vibe of, like, Jaime being less important and lower than the other employees at the auction house. And even though he is working his ass off and he was there before Prue got there and planning to be there after she leaves, he tells her that she's the hardest working person he knows.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Not fucking him. Mm-mm. No. Prue, who spent yesterday fucking binge shopping while he was probably mopping a bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway. But that's none of my business.
No, that is the, that's the fault of the 5,000 writers that were on this episode.
Yeah.
But Prue, like, hacks into the computer system, basically just using a search engine that tells her nothing. Why did Rex and Hannah not put themselves in the computer?
They're incompetent.
Why do they not bother to do that?
Well, it doesn't make any sense, because obviously they still have to be, like, doing things to maintain the business. I mean, if nothing else, they gotta be doing some fucking payroll. They hired her.
Right?
But apparently they are not in the computer system, so they have no access to the computer system. So what the fuck did they do all day at work?
Just scheme, like... scheme. Poorly.
Bang and light cigars, like...
light cigars... summon 17th century warlocks, turn yeah. into, like, anamorphs. yeah. But Rex astral projects in and makes Prue freak out and steers her towards the warehouse and compels her to pick up the murder weapon that Hannah just killed Jaime with. And then Phoebe shows up to witness the scene. And again, as we just mentioned, Jaime is a one-episode Latino janitor who gets murdered. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Great job with the representation there.
Yeah, it literally could have been anybody else. Anybody else.
And we've said it before, and we will say it again, but this show has a problem with casting people of color for only one episode, and then they always seem to die. Time and time again.
Andy and Daryl show up to find the security tape of Prue stealing the tiara. That is their purpose in this scene. Also to, like, investigate this now murder. I feel like, okay... so here's the thing. Andy and Daryl get assigned to cases that are not homicide, and then they end up being homicides.
Yeah. Oh, you know what I was just thinking? They also were assigned that kidnapping in episode two. Not a homicide. Not a homicide.
Not a homicide. Yeah. Not a yeah. homicide.
Anyway.
Prue gets arrested at the end of this, and Phoebe refuses to believe that Rex is behind it, and even goes as far... to go back to Rex's fake apartment to try to get him to help. Phoebe is a dumbass.
Yeah. But, of course, she quickly realizes how wrong she is when she breaks into the apartment, finds it abandoned and not at all spectacular, and that she dropped her lip lipstick during her fake premonition on the floor next to the invisible imaginary couch that she was just doing air squats on. And she's like, well, shit, I'm dating a warlock. And then Phoebe just guesses that Rex can astral project, which makes no sense based on the evidence that he made her hallucinate.
Her exact line is something like, Piper asks how he could do something like that, and Phoebe's like, mind control, astral projection, throwing charms, who knows? Clearly, you don't.
All of which seem like really, really
those
different.
Those are all really different things.
Yeah. I mean, except in this episode where there are not.
The throwing charms thing was really the thing that got me, because I was like, that's not, you don't throw a, that's not how that works, but whatever, it's fine.
Technically, the other day at work, this keychain of Sailor Mars that I really loved broke off of my key ring, and I looked at it on the floor and broken, and I remembered that my ex gave it to me, so then I chucked it in a trash can, so you could say I threw a charm. Okay.
You know what? Fair point. I stand corrected.
Yeah. So in a very television holding cell that does not exist in real life, where they have these like old timey, I can almost squeeze through them bars.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like looking at other prisoners. And it's just, it's not like that. And I'm not telling you that I've been in a jail holding cell. That's not what I'm saying to you right now. But I can tell you it's just not like that. I'm also not saying it. Yeah, so this like a creepy white guy is like making kissing sounds at Prue, which I think was just like a very like TV appropriate way to say that he was sexually harassing her. But yeah. Also, again, there's no way that like men and women are put in adjacent holding cells, even if it's just at the police station. It's not a thing. It's not happening. Yeah, but anyway, so he's being a creep and making kissy noise at her, and she just like squints and throws his ass into a wall, which is like really satisfying, but also like, what the fuck is with the random sexual harassment in this episode?
I don't know. Okay, so I said that I really like this episode, but as we're getting into it and we're talking about some of the problematic themes, I don't know if I like it anymore, because there's sexual harassment everywhere. There's blatant racism.
Just everywhere. But do you know what? That's also what it's like to be a woman. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a bummer.
I know. I live to be a feminazi bummer. Hi, I'm Zarin.
So, Andy's the only one doing any work on this case right now. Andy is just now thinking, I should run some background checks on the auction house employees. He thinks Prue's innocent, which, I mean, true, but stark difference from the last episode where he was ready to throw her in prison for stealing a fucking feather.
But yeah, he's already arrested someone, but he's only just now doing background checks on the key witnesses to the crime. It's whatever.
Never proper police procedure in this show.
Maybe just stick to homicide, Andy, okay? Like, it's cute that you tried, but...
Stay in your lane, bitch. Daryl is like, come on, man. You're making this, like, way harder than it needs to be. Let's just throw her in prison. You wanted to do it last week. Let's just do it now.
Yeah, Andy's really mercurial in that way.
But Phoebe is hatching a plan. She has an idea, and she puts zero thought into it. They just go for it. She doesn't care about the law. They gotta kill some warlocks, so she decides that they're gonna break Prue out of jail.
Yeah, so as they're planning to bust Prue out of jail, Rex is astrally, of course, watching the whole thing and planning how to fuck them over. All right, so they're literally, like, at the police station, and Piper's like, even though we, like, drove all the way here, I'm only now going to voice my concerns that we can't just break her out of jail. And Phoebe's like, yes, we can. We're witches. Be gay. Do crimes. Bust prisoners out of jail. Love that. Okay, so what follows is absolute bullshit, okay? Piper and Phoebe just stroll up on the back entrance to the police station where the holding cells are, throw open the unlocked doors, okay, and freeze the room, and then just walk in. Piper busts Prue loose, They stuff pillows under a blanket like they're eighth graders going out to their first kegger, and they take off just in time to get photographed by Rex right outside the police station. Oh yeah, and as they're leaving, Prue puts the cell keys into a guard's hand, even though Piper took them off his belt, but nobody's gonna notice that.
She also stole his donut.
She did.
She stole that jelly donut. I'd be pissed.
Bitch is hungry. Like, she's having a day.
Yeah, Rex is a fucking Polaroid and is all like, I've been spying on you and you are all stupid. And he monologues his entire fucking plan, then tells him he's scared shitless of fighting them, so he went with blackmail. Even though they're all standing right the fuck there and they could just take him down right now. Why didn't Prue just be like, give me that Polaroid with her powers and fucking throw it out of his hands? She just stood there.
Yeah, so this is like another classic scenario that could have been resolved if Piper just literally used her powers. Like, all she had to do was freeze Rex and like take the photograph out of his hand, which she's proven that she can do before, and then she could just destroy the photo and the camera and he would be frozen, and then they could just fucking like stab him with a crowbar. They've done that before.
Yeah, it's just, it's a classic scenario of like all about Prue.
Mm-hmm. But instead they're just like, holy shit, he's got a photograph. We are fucked, girls. We are fucked.
Oh my god, he has a camera and a lantern from Hobby Lobby. What are we gonna do? Rex tells them to use this spell in the Book of Shadows that he inexplicably knows about to put their powers in this literal lantern that looks like they could have gotten it at Michael's Crafts or Hobby Lobby. Again, this is just a scenario where it could have been anything else, but they chose like the worst option.
So the sisters go home and they debate using the relinquishment spell to give up their powers like Rex wants. Phoebe is like, fuck that, let's just go beat him up. And Prue is like, we can't because Rex is invisibly creeping on us right now, so we just gotta do it. He'll see any, you know, plan coming. And Piper is like, you know what, girls? My plan is just to do this and hope for the best. And they're like, okay, compelling argument, Piper. Let's do it. And, you know, Leo is eavesdropping.
Yeah, since Leo doesn't have an apartment, he's just, like, hanging out in their house when they're not home.
Oh, it's all coming together now. Just like Jaime, instead of going home, he just continues working.
Yeah, so Leo's just... I don't want to see their bill if he's there that late. Jesus Christ.
Oh, you know how Piper paying the bill.
Oh, yeah. They don't got to pay. She's paying in crab. They decide that they're going to cast the relinquishment spell. And it goes like this.
From whence they came, return them now. Banish the words, banish our powers.
From whence they came, return them now. Banish the words, banish our powers. Come on, Phoebe.
Okay. From whence they came, return them now. Banish the words, banish our powers.
This is Misspelled, the segment where we examine the validity of the spells used by TV witches and talk about how a real witch might go about doing the same thing.
So the functionality of this spell is in direct opposition to, like, my view of just cosmology and magic in general. I think that magic is an inherent human trait, quality, ability, whatever you want to call it, that cannot be separated from the person. I just don't see it that way. I don't think there's a real world situation that would be equivalent to the situation that the sisters are in right now. Having someone blackmail you to give up your witchcraft, and give it to them. I don't see that happening. You know, interestingly enough, this is also the main plot point of The Covenant, which we just reviewed, and I didn't put that together.
Oh yeah.
Until now.
It is.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. So, yeah. So, you know, the spell exists basically to work within, you know, what they wanted to do with the plot of the episode. But I just don't see it really having a real world, real witchcraft parallel. If you don't want to be a witch anymore, stop calling yourself a witch and stop practicing witchcraft. Like, that's all you gotta do. I guess if you wanted to give it up for some reason, you could do like a kind of ritual to cement your decision.
I think this is it's a good thing for us to talk about in Misspelled, because there's not always going to be a real world application to the spells that we see on TV, because some stuff is just like made up, and that's part of what we do here. I feel very similarly. I feel that magic is a force that is accessible to everyone, no matter what, no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing. There's not a way for somebody to take that away from you. So this spell exists as a plot point. This is not a spell that would work. This is not a spell that has any elements that are based in reality. This is just a plot point. It exists to further the plot.
But even, like, I'm struggling to, like, even really, like, identify with that, because witchcraft can fit into, like, any religious or spiritual path, and witchcraft doesn't demand any kind of, like, certain practice you must do within an allotted period of time.
This is the first time that they're separated from their powers in some way, but it's not the last time that it happens. And...
No, it happens quite a lot.
It sort of contradicts itself in a way, right? Because their powers are within them, and they belong to those specific people, but they can give them away somehow, and someone else can use mm-hmm. them.
And they're all connected to each other, too, like, dependent on each other. And of course, in this episode, when they lose their powers, it also takes away the Book of Shadows, which I have a... strong feelings about how much that fucking sucks. But like in other times, they lose their quote unquote active powers, but can still cast spells and make potions and are still witches. So like, which isn't, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's contradictory within itself. It contradicts the reality of magic. I personally, like, I view magic as both an external and internal force. I have a very universalist perspective on it. I mean, I guess we could talk about maybe breaking a spell, because this is a spell that does get reversed.
Ish. I mean, that's kind of it, but also kind of not really. As I sit here and think about it, I get the closest thing that maybe we could talk about is how a person might try to suppress, like, a psychic gift in some way because it's annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Like my sister gets sick of, like, feeling how other people are feeling sometimes. I get sick of having a really good idea about what's going to happen in the future and ignoring it and making bad decisions anyway and then turning out to be right. Or whatever.
Yeah, there are definitely certain things that we have less control over in terms of practice that you could find ways to maybe suppress, but I feel like...
But again, it's not like removing them and giving them to someone else. It's not like that.
There's not really anywhere that we can take this one, I don't think.
Not really. I can see how you would relate it to breaking a spell, but I think we're going to run into, like, an actual better instance where we could talk about that, so...
I feel like it's still good to put this in the show and do this segment, because there are going to be times where something's just not real. Misspelled is the place where we talk about how something would happen in reality, and this would not happen.
So I guess what we're saying is, if you could find a way to use the words that they chant in this spell to do something you want to do, like, possibly breaking a spell, that's fine, but as far as Phoenix and I are concerned, we're going to consider the relinquishment spell debunked.
Misspelled.
So they cast this spell, and a swirling mist and flashing lights and the sound effect of all the different powers play together, and their powers exit their body in the form of those glowing balls that Charmed is famous for, go into this Hobby Lobby lantern, and the Book of Shadows is rendered completely blank. Which, why?
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess that's, like, because the Book of Shadows is connected to them being witches, too, all the time, and it's, like, connected to their powers, and it sort of becomes this, like, magical book that grows on its own based on their powers, you know? But, I mean... At this point, you know, we're just led to believe that the book was, like, written in ink on paper by flesh and blood other people. So the fact that it can just be erased like that bugs me. And also, I hate the idea of that, like, happening to my book, which I've spent years and years and countless markers on.
Yeah, I don't really care for that either. That's also something that has happened in the new Charmed that I don't care for. Their Book of Shadows got completely destroyed.
Dude, that fucking sucked.
Yeah.
I hated that shit. I hated that shit.
The whole second season of that show is just something else. It's good, but goddamn it.
But it is balls to the wall.
It's balls to the wall, like 0 to 100 so fast. That's not what we're talking about right now, but it happens, and it's related, and I don't like it. Yeah, the Book of Shadows, there are times where it is its own character, right? And I feel like this is one of those times. I feel like the Book of Shadows like got pissed at them. It was like, okay, you cast this spell that is in here for no reason and shouldn't exist in the first place. Like, who the fuck wrote that? And so I'm gonna leave you with nothing. You have, you know, given up your lineage, your legacy, your power, and I don't want to help you anymore. Which, you know,
I don't see it so much as the book being pissed at them, but just that was the way the book also lost its power.
Yeah, you know, that makes sense too. I have a problem with the relinquishment spell in the first place because I don't think it should exist. I don't know which witch in their line wrote that one, but they're cut off.
Well, and you know what I was just thinking about that? So I was going to bring this up later, but this episode, which was originally conceived to be the finale of season one.
Yeah.
Which is why it's the showdown with Rex and Hannah, who are like the overarching villains up to this point. And so I guess thematically, it kind of makes sense that in the beginning of season one, they gain their powers and at the end of season one, they lose them. So maybe that's where that whole idea came from, was just kind of a thematic arc. And when I think about it like that, it makes more sense than it does when you consider that it just ended up being like the mid-season finale as opposed to the season finale.
I mean, I read that in our outline, and you saying it here makes it make a lot more sense. It really does. Mm-hmm. Do you know, like, what happened? Like, why this episode ended up in the middle instead of at the end as it was originally planned to be?
Well, I'm guessing it's because, so, television shows tend to be either between 10 and 12 episodes a season or 22 episodes a season. So, it's possible that Charmed was first ordered for 10 episodes. Since this is the pilot season. And then they decided to continue it for another 12 and make it a standard 22 episode season, because especially on the WB at this time, every show was like 22 episodes,
right?
For the most part.
A very similar thing happened with Buffy, where they were ordered as a mid-season replacement and only got 12 in their first season. So that makes sense. Right. That makes sense. I think that that's a plausible theory, because I read that and I was like, yeah, I think I would have preferred this as a season finale, to be honest.
Oh, I don't know about that, because the Charmed season one finale is one of the best episodes there is.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. I'm going to have to disagree with you there.
Yeah. I feel like Rex and Hannah had a little bit more potential. Like, we could have spent some more time with them, but I'm also okay with the fact that they're dead now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, just consider it. So the pilot episode, you know, didn't have an overarching villain because it was just the pilot and they wanted it to be wrapped up. But Rex and Hannah appear in the second episode, and so it makes sense that they were first conceived of as the season one main villains.
Right.
So anyway, so after they cast the spell, you know, we're at Buckland's, which is, I guess, the villain's lair now, because like Leo and Jaime, they don't have houses. So Rex says they're coming, and Hannah is like, good, because I'm a giant fucking cat. And then she literally animorphs into a panther.
The first fucking thing I thought when I saw this was, oh my god, is this animorphs? Like,
yeah. It's a little, I mean, I don't really know what they were going for here, honestly, but I will tell you that in a previous episode, Rex tells Hannah not to worry or she'll get wrinkles on her horns, but apparently her other form is a cat that doesn't have horns, so like, what the fuck are you talking about?
But just in the nick of time, Andy discovers that Rex and Hannah are frauds with a quick Google search, and then does nothing timely with its information. He sits with it for God knows how long.
For a little bit.
Well, all this fucking shit is going on while Prue is literally in danger. Not that he knows that, because he thinks she's still in the holding cell. Thank God they put those pillows on the cot. Otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Because even though Andy used to literally have sex with Prue, he finds her indistinguishable from a pile of pillows.
The search says that Rex and Hannah stole identities of people in their 20s whose pictures look like they're in their 50s.
They do.
They really do.
And actually, I checked up on that. Yeah, if when it closes up on the information on them, it says that Hannah is 22 and Rex is 24, but when you look at the pictures, they are like 45 minimum.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the picture of the person who's supposed to be Rex is the same guy that plays that volcanologist that Faith kills in season 3 of Buffy.
Oh my god, he looks like he like literally lives in a basement apartment and like collects corpses of praying mantises. Well, like, I don't know, sending dirty messages to cam girls, you know, like, he's not cute.
No. The sisters show up to Buckland's to make the trade-off, and Phoebe plans to kick some ass if she gets the chance, but is she taking her martial arts, kickboxing, self-defense, karate lessons?
No. No, she's not a martial artist yet. She just says, what if we, like, knock the lantern on the floor and step on it and get our powers back and then we fucking kill everybody? And Prue and Piper are like, I don't know, Phoebe, that sounds like a lot. Yeah, so after they hand the lantern over and, you know, the deal was that they were supposed to go free afterward and Rex would destroy the blackmail. But instead he says this line. He says, this all feels a little anticlimactic. And I could not help but notice that this is kind of a villain line in this show, because the Source says the exact same thing in season 4, and Zanku says the exact same thing in season 7, both when they're about to try to kill all the charmed ones. And so I'm not sure if it's lazy, repetitive writing, or if it's good, continuous illusion. Maybe both, you know? I don't know.
Honestly, it's just kind of true of how a lot of the showdowns go, in my opinion. I've always thought that sometimes Charmed's, like, big battles just kind of end up with it being the sisters and their opponents standing across from each other, like, throwing lime green tennis balls to help the special effects department, you know? Like,
well, it's more like, it's, I mean, this is not how this one goes down, obviously, but it tends to be more like, they, like, go through, like, 35 minutes of just a bunch of stressful shit, and then finally they all, like, chant a poem together, and it's over.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's exactly that. Here's these words that we read in this big old book. The battle's over now.
Yeah, either that or, like, Piper, like, finally gets a clear shot and just fucking kills them, you know?
Yeah, it's just...
It goes down like that a lot, too.
It really does. A lot of the showdowns are anticlimactic, so I feel like it's both clever writing and just, like, truth.
Pretty much from seasons 4 to 8, it's, like, stressful shit for a half an hour, and then Piper is just finally like, I'm fucking done with this. Bam!
Yes.
One shot, no need to double tap. You are splattered across the ceiling.
Mm-hmm. So, Hannah the Animorph shows up to attack the sisters. And the sisters are like, well, what the fuck are we gonna do now? Get eaten, I guess.
Well, shit.
Well, goddamn, we done been got. We was fooled. We was foolish. We've been duped. Like, it's a whole thing. They are in some deep fucking shit right now. But Leo is on his way up to the attic to do God knows what with his random ass powers he suddenly has.
Some kind of bullshit.
And he, like, heals the book, maybe? Which undoes the spell somehow.
What?
Why did this happen like this?
You know, it kind of reinforces your the book is a character in this episode thing. Because this is the first time Leo uses his healing powers, and he uses it on a book.
The book is hurt. The book is injured.
But apparently by losing the writing in it, that's the book's injury, and by healing it, the writing comes back, which de facto busts the sisters' powers out of Hobby Lobby Lantern and puts them back in their body. What?
What the fuck? I don't understand how this worked. The book was erased magically by a spell. It did not get thrown across the room.
Yeah. Do you know, this also sort of suggests that Leo is more powerful than the Charmed Ones, because he can undo a power of three spell just by using his hand?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. It's all over the place. The more that we get into this, as I said earlier, the more I'm like, what the fuck is going on? What is happening?
I told you this episode is a fucking Monet.
Yeah, it's so weird. But anyway, thank goodness, thank the Lord, thank the White Lighter that their powers have been freed from this lantern miraculously. And Piper freezes Hannah as she's pouncing through the air. Do you think they got a real panther?
I don't know. I kind of doubt it.
I doubt it too, but there are times where it like looks kind of real, and then there are times where it looks like it's stock footage.
It's probably more like stock footage. Probably some green screen shit. But especially when Hannah lands, it did not look real.
There's a scene in particular, I think it's when she first comes out, where the panther like trots out from behind a door where it looks like a real panther, and then the rest of it looks fake. But yeah, they get their powers back just in the nick of time. Piper freezes Hannah because her powers work when she's panicky for some reason. And Prue is like, okay, this is good. I can kill. And so she, like,
yeah.
She pushes Rex into her path, and then when Hannah unfreezes, she just, like, kills the fucking shit out of Rex. And she's like, whoops, my bad. And then, out of nowhere, this unseen force from beneath the earth, or maybe just in the basement of the building, I don't know.
Or just the floor beneath them.
The floor beneath them.
Like the 51st floor, I guess.
Their neighbors downstairs were like, oh my god, you're making so much noise right now. And they decide to just like set them on fire. They start to burn up and they just conveniently get vanquished. And Hannah's like, it's not my fault. I didn't fail, even though I killed him. I don't know. It's so anticlimactic, the way that it goes down.
Well, and you know, again, that's probably because it was supposed to be the season finale. So Rex and Hannah, our overarching villains, have just been destroyed, but now we're being hinted at the next villain, which of course it's implied that this is the Source who killed Rex and Hannah, because the Source apparently likes to kill villains that haven't quite completely failed yet at killing the Charmed Ones. He's just like, well, this is obviously not going to work. I'm just going to cut you loose. You're fired.
You're fired. Literally.
Yeah. So I guess maybe they were trying to set it up for the Source to be the big bad of season two. Of course, you know, that's not how it works out actually until season four, but
yeah, no, it's sort of like, you know, as we've said before, the Source is sort of like this ominous unseen presence, this unseen villain, and then there are like agents of him that we encounter in the meantime. And I think that this was an example of that. Obviously, I really hope that Rex and Hannah got a lovely severance package in hell. But it leaves us to wonder what's going to happen next. Who are they going to fight next? What's the next challenge for our protagonists here?
And this is kind of a thing that Charmed struggles with a lot, is like setting up big bad villains that, and then kind of changing their mind about it later.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
Because they changed their mind about when to introduce the Source a couple of times. And it's not even something you need to research. It's very obvious as you go through the episodes.
Yeah.
Because again, in season two, they act like the Source is going to be the big bad, but then they change it to the Triad. And then they act like the Triad is going to be the big bad for a while, but then, you know what, they're not. But then again, they are! What? What is happening?
Yeah, I don't know. Charmed is just not great at villains. They're not.
Charmed, while being adorable and hilarious and so clever at times, just seems to lack writers with long-term plans.
Yeah.
Or rather, writers that can agree on long-term plans when all 500 of them are working on one script.
Exactly that. I feel like this is one of those times, as we're talking about this, where I wish that Constance would have stayed on the show.
Although, I mean, she was there for this.
She was there for this, but I feel like it wouldn't have gotten so kerfuffled later.
Yeah, you're probably
if she had been a little bit more in charge of what was going on. Because we've seen that she's a good writer. I mean, the Dream Sorcerer episode is an incredible episode of television. You know, she conceptualized this show. You know, we know that she is capable of, like, creating a story with a beginning, a middle, and the end.
You know what, though? I'm going to have to say this. I'm going to have to criticize Constance on the air, and I'm so sorry. But Constance had a very active role in the reboot. And if you examine season one of the reboot, it's pretty fucking unclear who the villain is basically the entire season. Because the long-term story arcs of season one in the Charmed reboot are like, what the fuck? And every time you think it's going somewhere, it ends. And all of the loose ends from season one are completely swept under the rug for season two. So, just gonna throw that out there.
You're not wrong.
Are you frozen or are you digesting?
I am digesting, because that was a truth bomb right there.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. You're completely and totally right. Yeah.
So anyway, so I think we've dwelled on this for way too long.
We definitely have.
So anyway, after the source kills the shit out of Hannah, Prue says, well, shit, guys, I gotta go back to the clink. And Andy and Daryl, you know, show up and you really think they're gonna pull up the blankets and find a bunch of pillows. And you almost have to wonder if, like, Piper froze the room and snuck Prue back in, like, right before they lifted up the blanket. I almost get that vibe from it.
I do think that's what's happened, yeah.
It looks like it's gonna be pillows, but then magically it's Prue. Like, she's like a rabbit coming out of a hat, you know?
I do think that's what happened. I think that's exactly what happened.
So then Andy and Daryl are like, well, we realized that it was Rex and Hannah who did all this, like you tried to tell us before we arrested you. And Prue is like, cool, did you fucking do your job and catch them? No. Okay, great, that's fine, I'll kill them like I do everybody else. And then this part is really messed up to me. Andy has the blackmail photo of Prue escaping from the police station, and you can clearly tell that she's wearing the same outfit that she still is, and you can clearly tell that the police station is in the background, and he just has this photo and he's like, can you explain this? And she's like, I don't know, bro, but I sure do look fucking cute in it, don't I? And Andy's like, oh, that's adorable. Why'd we quit dating?
It's very... God, I don't know. It's just it's a messy ending. It's a messy ending. Never, ever gets addressed.
No, well, it's... Okay, so, like, every single episode, basically, in season one, they drop a little something on Andy at the end that is obviously suspicious, but he can't do anything with it. And that's the element of this episode.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm sure that picture is, like, in his, like, big fucking file that he has at the end of season one. But, of course, they're not going to reference it again because that would just be too much continuity, you know?
Honestly. So Prue gets out of jail and they get back home and the book is back to normal. Leo and Piper get this really sweet goodbye scene. Leo barges into the attic while they still have the Book of Shadows out and a bunch of candles lit, and the sisters are just like chill with it.
They are like so chill about it too. Like, I remember when my mom would try to like barge into my room when I had my Book of Shadows open, and I would slam that bitch shut and throw a blanket over it. Like, I'm not casting spells, mom, I'm just masturbating, you know? Like, it just... So Leo's ass looks great in this scene, but I just can't get over the tucked in shirt. I can't.
Brian Krause's ass is just incredible, always.
It really is. And like, they talk about it and it's deserved. But the tucked in shirt, Phoenix, I can't.
I didn't notice the tucked in shirt. I didn't notice it.
I got two words for that tucked in shirt. I can't. So
I feel like I would just take a shirt off.
That would be 100% better, actually. Yeah, that would be less ridiculous. It would be less ridiculous for him to be doing handyman work topless than it is for him to have that tucked in fucking shirt on. It's ridiculous.
So Leo and his great ass and tucked in shirt leave the attic. And while he's still in the house, assumedly, the sisters are like, let's burn this spell and be witches forever. Full voice out loud, not secretive at all. And Leo orbs away. And these orbs are blue. They're blue. We learn later that Leo is a white lighter because they're called white lighters because they teleport in white lights. But those lights are blue.
I mean, sure, it doesn't make sense. They call him a white lighter when he has, like, cerulean orbs. But what else were they going to call him? Blue balls? A blue baller?
A blue baller. Yes. That it would be more accurate.
Not necessarily. Great. So this is what I originally meant to bring up, that this episode was conceived of as the season one finale, because it ends in the way that Charmed likes to end every season, which is with telekinetically closing doors. It's kind of their thing, which I honestly always thought was really cute. I think it's a great iconic ending for a season, and I love that they do it every time.
Yes, it's very cute. It's very cute. So that's it for this episode. We went through everything. Final thoughts. Do you have any final thoughts?
My final thoughts is that this episode is a fucking Monet, and there's a lot of things I like about it, and that I am way more entertaining on this podcast when I am drinking Chi-Chi's mini margarita.
Okay. My final thoughts are that I don't like this episode as much as I originally thought I did, because of... Yeah, everything that we just mentioned, it's a Monet. I didn't get that reference at the beginning. I understand it now.
But you totally get it now.
I totally get it now. I agree with what you're saying.
But just remember that film studies and close analysis ruin literally everything that you once found enjoyable, except for She-Ra, because that show is like top-notch, ironclad, fucking perfect. But everything else.
Yeah, I think that this is going to happen a lot more as we go along. There are going to be episodes that I really enjoyed previously that I don't like now. Because when you get into...
I'm going to ruin the shit out of it for you.
As we, you know, there are going to be elements that I thought were compelling, but then when I really look at them, I'm like, oh, that was bad. But then there are also things later where it's bad, and I'm like, oh, that's bad. And I still like those episodes.
Well, I'm always going to like every episode, no matter how horribly I understand it. It's just a great show, even when it sucks.
Yeah.
You know?
Overall, is this my favorite episode? Absolutely not. Would I recommend this episode as something to learn about witchcraft from? Absolutely not.
100% nope.
No. We experienced a couple of different deaths today.
My kill of the day is for sure Wreck, because it's not often that, like, you get to see the big bad villain mauled to death by a giant fucking cat. And I don't know if you know this about me, but I love all cats of all sizes. And I think that every beautiful kitty out there should fucking murder a sexual predator today.
Yes. I think...
Even if he is your boyfriend, fucking kill him.
I think my kill of the day is... I want to say the Verve, because they don't make music anymore. But my kill of the day, I think, is Hannah, because it's dramatic and over the top, and she tries to blame someone else for her mistakes, and I think I can just really relate.
Yeah, plus, as a witch, when I die, I think I really would like to go up in flames for one reason or another, you know?
Honestly, yeah. Kill of the day.
Iconic.
One of my biggest fears is being burned at the stake, and I know that's really irrational, but like...
It's unlikely to happen, but it would suck.
It would really suck.
If I had to rate this episode, I would probably give it 3 straight godlike villains in a row who are utterly incompetent fucking failures. But hey, also, bam, 12 bonus episodes for a continued season. Congratulations, Charm Season 1. You did it.
I would give it the ambiguous number of times Piper froze Leo while they were having sex. Where can the people find you?
You can, like, super totally follow me on my Facebook meme page, Siren Spectacular, non-binary meme witch. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Siren Spectacular, where I tend to just kind of be a bitch. Or you can watch my coven's YouTube channel, Millennial Incantations.
You can follow me on Instagram at Phoenix Arcana Lightwood. You can follow me on Twitter at Phoenix Arcana _. You can follow the podcast at WBRcast across the board. If you have a question or something you'd like to hear us talk about, please feel free to send us an email at witchbereview@gmail.com.
All right, you ambiguously magical fuckboys.
Until next time, keep on witching.
And bitching.
Bye.
Bye.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?